You're listening to Talking Baseball with Ed Randall, presented by MLB.com. He's Ed Randall. He's talking baseball. What more do you need?
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, Big Ed and Nora's baby boy, and welcome back to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. The Cleveland Indians are the American League champions. Years before, the 1988 club was nothing special, winning 78 and losing 84 and finishing last in the old American League East. But that club would have a bright future. It was an incubator for future managers. Terry Francona, John Farrell, Charlie Manuel, Ron Washington, and Bud Black played on the 88 Indians. As John Farrell said, little did we know that the fertile shores of Lake Erie was cultivating five future managers. The manager of that special club spent 58 years in baseball, including five as a catcher in the major leagues. In that time, he was a positive influence on the careers of too many players to count. And we are so happy to welcome to the show Doc Edwards. Doc, great to have you. Thank you so much for your kindness. Before we talk about the 88 Indians, tell me about the town you were born in, Red Jacket, West Virginia.
It's a coal mining town down in about far as you can get to it. And you can get down in the hills of West Virginia. And little did I know when I was growing up, the Edwards family played on all those coal field leagues. My dad, and I had seven uncles that played on the same team.
Wow.
And in fact, down in Williamson, West Virginia, they rode a lot of coming down there. I don't think we're ever going to go back.
How many traffic lights in Red Jacket, West Virginia, when you were growing up?
Probably still none.
And
you know, and Red Jacket got his name. It was one day there. An Indian chief, he looked out and he had a red blanket over his shoulders. And somebody said, "Look at that red that Indian with a red jacket."
and
that's where it got its name. And I that's where I was born.
How good a ball player was your dad and your uncles?
All of them played. My Uncle James was probably the best player in a lot. My dad was a catcher. And they all played on a coal field league team, and there's probably like nine guys on the ball club.
So they were good ball players.
They were good, yeah. They would, and you had to keep your job. You had to play baseball.
You know, that's not a bad thing.
No, it's not.
You can keep your job by playing baseball. You can keep your job by you have to work overtime. I would take the baseball.
Yes, I would too.
There's a story about your dad, Doc, that he vowed to break your legs if you followed in his footsteps down into the mines. Is that true?
Yes, sir. He definitely did. Every one of them worked in the coal fields, and the manager of the ball club was Lewis, my Uncle Lewis, and he was in a cave-in, and he's. Lost the feel from around the waist and he had to manage, and everybody else had to play.
Wow, and your dad didn't want you to be exposed to that.
No, sir. Yeah. Because a lot of the guys died from coal dust and all that stuff.
Sure. You were signed to a professional contract by none other than Hall of Famer Ralph Kiner. Tell us the story.
Well, I was come out in the Navy, and I was in at Camp Pendleton, out in California, playing on the Marine team. And when I come out, started going to a school. To get somewhere in life, and an umpire who got me going to college out there, and the end of the season, he says, I want to send you down to San Diego. There's a guy down there I want to look at you. And I said, you're a pretty good football player, but I think you're a much better baseball player. And I went down, and little did I know, when I walked out on the field to take batting practice with him, it was Ralph Kiner. And I about fainted because, you know, down in West Virginia, Ralph Kiner and the Cincinnati Reds, that was everything to do in baseball in southern West Virginia. Mm. And they said he likes what he sees. He said, well, you go up to the office. And it went on years and years and years. And when Ralph was doing the radio for the Mets, and we're on set on the plane going west, and Ralph says, "You know, I was only assigned one guy to Timmy Kamert," and he says, "Well, who was that?" And Ralph says, "You're sitting right next to him, Tim."
Wow.
And he said, I signed one guy, and he went to the big leagues.
Right, and that was Doc Edwards.
That was me.
It was Howard Rodney Edwards when you went in as a Navy medic in the Marines, but you came out as Doc Edwards.
That's right. I like Doc better than Rodney. You know. That didn't sound too good.
Before we talk about the 88 Indians, there's also this. You were traded to the Yankees. You went from Cleveland to the Kansas City A's, and then from the Kansas City A's to the Yankees in 1965. Yeah. You were there not a long period of time, but you were dressing in the same room as Mickey Mantle. And there's a story that you were so impressed with Mantle that you wanted to name one of your sons after him.
Yes, I did. But my wife says that I'm not going to let you name Mickey Mantle Edwards.
So what happened?
I named him Howard Michael and called him Mickey anyway.
And he's known, and he's been known as Mickey.
He is up in he lives up around Rochester, New York, and everybody knows him, the Mick.
He's the Mick. That's great. Yeah. Doc Edwards is with us. He was the manager of the 1988 Cleveland Indians, and from that team came five future Major League managers, including the manager of the American League champion Cleveland Indians, Terry Francona. Speaking of Rochester, you had the distinction of managing in Rochester in 1981. You managed the Rochester Red Wings.
Yes.
At that time, that was Baltimore's AAA. Cal Ripken was on that team. And that was the team that lost to Pawtucket in the famous 33-inning game, the longest game in baseball history, that was actually played in two parts.
That's right. It was about 4 o'clock in the morning. We had to go, and that was in May, and we had to go back and during the summer and finish the ball game. And it only landed one inning.
And it got so much attention because, Doc, it took place during the time of the baseball strike, and the 50-day baseball strike in the summer of 81.
Yes, it was. And we had guys from Korea and everywhere come over just to get some baseball because it lasted about 15 minutes. And guys have had to fly all the way back to Korea and everywhere for one winning.
Yeah.
One inning, yeah.
It was, and your opposite number, Joe Morgan, got thrown out of that game.
Yeah, he's smart. He's smart. I was out there at 4 in the morning still. And they said, because it was cold and raining, and it was just nasty. But
there was a story that in the first part of that game, the umpires didn't know what to do. do you just keep playing into the night and into the night through the night, and no. that they called the league president, Harold Cooper, of the International League, they woke him up in the middle of the night to say, we don't know what to do here. And apparently, back then, the rules for the governing the International League, Doc, were mimeographed. Yep. And the passage about extra inning games had been cut off from the bottom of the page, so these guys didn't know what to do.
That's right. And they finally got him, got a hold of him, and he said, stop it right here, and continue when they come back. We didn't go back until in July, I think it was.
Mm-hmm. And then got finished. I give Bruce Hurst a lot of grief about the fact, he likes to boast about the fact, Doc, that he was on the Pawtucket Club, that he struck out Cal Ripken at 3 in the morning on a curveball. That's unconscionable, you know, to throw a guy a curveball at 3 o'clock in the morning on 2 strikes and strike him out. I thought that was just bad form.
I tell you, you know, and a lot of guys had some great ball players. The third baseman,
Boggs,
you know,
played in that game.
He got traded to the Yankees.
Right, Wade Boggs.
And Wade Boggs, and there's three or four pitchers went on the big leagues to Pawtucket to the big league.
Right. About the 1988 club, you won 78 games, but when you look at where the team came from that year, Doc, it was a good year, because the year before they had won 61 games and lost 101.
Well, you know, when we got started in the late, we were in first place going into the second half of the thing, and I think the owner then was real good, grew up in Cleveland, he made Hank fire me going into first place, because we'd fallen back to the Yankees or somebody, he told Hank that, you got to fire somebody here. He said, Pip had hep it up. And Hank says, I didn't get you anything, and no pitching and nothing. And I had to do nothing but to fire you. And Hank actually offered me a job as a assistant to Hank, and I had said I would be the next in line, but the job was only paid $58,000 that year, and the Mets gave me $150,000, so I had to take the $150,000 over the $58,000.
Right,
and that's the only mistake I think in my life in baseball I've made was. Didn't take stay with Cleveland. Cleveland Kiner signed me, you know, for Cleveland, and he was AAA ball club in San Diego, and I think that's the only mistake that I made was take the $150 job and stay here in Cleveland.
Right, and you took that job to be a coach with the Mets for 2 years in 1990 and 91.
Yeah,
you
and
also
it paid the, you know, it was too much money.
Yeah, you also played in AAA with three future managers: Sparky Anderson, Chuck Tanner, and Joe Altobelli.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And when spring training was one day, somebody said years later. We were taking those guys were taking hitting the ball and everything around in the spring training, and then somebody said Sparky and the other guy, I mean they put something on the board too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean as the managers.
Yep, Altobelli went to the World Series with the Baltimore Orioles and won it.
Yep.
Chuck Tanner had great success, won a World Series with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Sparky, of course, in the Baseball Hall of Fame. You also managed, beside the five guys on Cleveland, you also managed Kevin Kennedy and Grady Little, both of whom managed in Boston.
Yes.
Pete
yes,
McCannon, and now at Philadelphia.
In fact, I took Grady with me when I went left the Yankees. I took him with me, and then he moved on to have a pretty good he managed two Baltimore ball club.
Kevin Kennedy and Grady Little both managed the Red Sox. Pete McCannon is in Philadelphia now. You also managed Dave Clark, who managed 13 games for Houston in 2009. So between the guys you played with, the five guys on the Indians, and these guys, you were surrounded by managers.
Well, you know, and the two, the some of the pitchers that are now, I mean, they were playing for me. I wasn't playing with them. They're all those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard, understand that a couple of the guys there are coming back to the big leagues in some capacity this coming upcoming year.
Mm-hmm. We're with Doc Edwards, who managed five future managers on the 1988 Cleveland Indians. And all those guys, Doc, credit you for being such a positive influence, for being such a great teacher, for being so benevolent to them.
Well, you can be benevolent when you got guys like Ripken and all those guys. It makes it easy to be a good manager when you have all those guys.
And what's ironic is that you played with Terry Francona's father, with Tito, in Cleveland.
Yes,
and he was a very good ball player, first baseman.
Outstanding first baseman, outstanding. And he was a great first baseman too. And he come to the ballpark. He's just like his dad, Terry is. He come to the park to be win a ball game, not to do anything else but win a ball game.
Mm. You have known Terry Francona almost his entire life since he was a little kid.
Yes,
because
yes,
he
sir.
Was born in 59,
exactly.
and his father played with you in 62. You've known him since he was a toddler.
That's right. Absolutely. Yep.
And he had a good year for you. He was primarily one of your DHs, but he batted 311. And those guys who have grown up with fathers who played professional ball or played in the major leagues, Doc, they seem to be different. They really, really understand the game.
Yes, they were. You know, they all when they're growing up in their childhood, he's absorbing baseball and doesn't realize what's going on. And then he went to college out in spring training for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people loved Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people over in Phoenix now, but they loved Tucson.
Mm-hmm. And Terry went to college in Arizona. John Farrell for you that year was 14-10. Later became Terry's pitching coach in Boston. He had a good year for you, Farrell.
Yes, he did. And he was a real man. Well, every one of those guys that I had to do somebody called me a guy going to be down in another league and everything, but some of them are popping up again.
Mm-hmm. What made John Farrell a good pitcher for you? What did he do out there?
He listened and talked, and when he was pitching for me, he every day he'd come out and he'd get not only get his job done during the day, he'd come over and sit next to me in the dugout and ask this and that, and I knew that he was definitely going to be something else because he was not only good, good, but he absorbed all that stuff, and I knew he would be in the game somewhere, when he couldn't, even if his arm would have stayed strong for him, he'd probably been he'd probably been in a lot of 20 games they do every year probably.
Mm. And also on that team, Charlie Manuel, a fantastic hitter, a great hitting coach, especially when he was at Cleveland.
And a great man.
And a great man from your part of the world, too. And
yes,
and Ron Washington, again, revered as such a patient teacher.
Well, he's going to be at third base for Atlanta this coming year.
Exactly right. He is. I know.
Well, some guy called me from up in where were they're in there, and we talked about him about a half an hour because he was a good man too.
Washington revered as one of the great infield coaches in the game with the
yes.
Oakland A's.
Yes.
And then there's Buddy Black who you acquired during the 88 season,
yes.
And he made the rare transition from pitching coach to manager and did a good job in San Diego and may
yes,
manage again.
Yes. Yes, he did. Terry was he was a good man. When we left Cleveland, I never was able to run across him again because he was a super young man too.
Mm. All these guys, these five future managers. Terry Francona, John Farrell, Charlie Manuel, Ron Washington, Bud Black. I would think, Doc, they all had really high baseball IQs.
Yes, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Did you think at the time that these guys had a future in the game?
Yes, I did. Because it's not that I was smart enough to do it, but I always say, well, the way he plays attention to this part of the game, I don't think they'll have to work for a job because I think he'll have a job.
When you watch Terry Francona win two World Series championships in Boston and the curse, the work he did in Cleveland this year was spectacular. Have you ever, when you've watched him manage, do you see yourself in the way in which he manages and handles a ball club?
Hopefully they do, because I see him do a lot of things, and it was a lot of things that I would do if I was on it. But remember, he's got a dad too.
Mm-hmm.
He was a smart man too, because he was a real good ball player. Other than just hit the ball, but he was a smart man too.
And wherever he has managed, Doc, whether it's in Boston or now in Cleveland, he seems to be beloved by his players. And there aren't a lot of managers out there that can say that.
That's right. But he's that type of guy. I mean, his dad was that type of guy. You know, you love to play with his dad. He was just a good human being too.
You have had a fantastic baseball life, young man.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
You still have five dogs?
Yes, I do. I certainly do. We got four Bichons and a little poodle.
That's great. That's terrific.
Yep.
Doc, it's so great to talk to you. The work that you did in the game, speaks for itself. Over 58 years in the major leagues as a player and as a coach, and the positive influence that you have been on the careers of too many players to count. I'm so honored to have you on the show with me, and I thank you so much.
Well, thank you too, and I look forward to this this time of year and getting the calls like this because it makes me feel good about the game itself.
And that'll do it for Doc Edwards and myself on MLB.com. If you're on the move, thanks for the ride, and thanks for listening to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball.